You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 319. This week, we talk about
Starman, Sins of the Father.
Visit WelcomeToComics.com, hear past episodes, see what we're reading next, or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. And now,
the cast begins.
So Infinity War was good?
Yeah, it was good. So it really did kind of like, you know, they've been building up to this for a while, and this, I think you get a good amount of payoff from this one.
Good.
I mean, obviously the thing is, so it was interesting. I mean, you guys know how it's going to end, right? I mean,
yeah,
like Thanos, how this movie ends.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad. So a lot of people, I wanted to make sure you guys knew that that's what, where this movie was going. I figured you did, as we've read like Infinity Gauntlet and stuff.
Yeah.
But there were people in the theater who were like, what the fuck? Good. That's awesome. Yeah. So, definitely stay till the end, till the credits are over.
Okay.
Because there is that after credit scene is more than just people eating shawarma.
You know what, though? I am so happy that people in the theaters are like, what the fuck is this? Because, go.
Like, the ending, I don't want to, like, so I knew how it was going to end, but I loved, like, the last scene before the credits, I mean. I loved it. I was like, this is perfect.
Okay. I'm gonna try and see it this week, but I mean, like, I appreciate it because that's the way comics have been for so long. It's like there's a big arc, and the end makes you go, what the fuck was this? Like, what the fuck just happened? What the, like, actual Infinity War at the end? You're like, what the fuck just happened? And what's the other ones like that? I think Dark Phoenix was like that, where there's like a building inside it. Like, just there's actual comics that end with, like, what the fuck is this? And I'm happy that people in movie theaters can get that experience, because it's such a comic book feeling that you never used to get in movies, because it was always considered too big of a risk. You know, but I think at this point, like, Marvel knows they can do kind of whatever the fuck they want. People are bought in or they're not, like, 20 movies in. And,
well, yeah.
And Infinity War is one of the classic comic books of all time. Like, they know it's good. You know it's good because you've sold, you know, millions of copies of it over the last, like, 30 years. You know it's good.
They're, like, so just still printing it. The trade.
Yeah. Right? They're still printing new copies of it. Like, you know it works. You know it. You know as a story it works. So, like, it's not that big of a risk. It seems like a bigger risk because nothing else is that risky. But, you know it's not.
I mean, because, like, at the end of the movie, like, there's... It's so good. So, all I know, right. Jen, you mentioned, like, last time we kind of talked about, I mentioned, like, are you excited for Infinity War? And you mentioned that you were kind of... you're feeling Marvel fatigue.
Yes.
I think that this movie... it does a good job of, like, acknowledging, like, it says, you know, everything was building up to this, and it does, like, it pulls everything in.
Okay.
And it's not just like a movie about Tony Stark with everybody else. Also, it's not that movie. He figures into it prominently, but there's like three concurrent storylines that the movie follows and then comes together at the end.
Huh. All right. I mean, I will watch it. I finally watched Black Panther today.
Oh, what did you think?
It was okay. It was better. It was better than the other Marvel movies.
Third highest grossing movie of all time. It's okay. Yeah, you know what, though? You know, though, I feel that about the others. So,
well, here's the thing with Black Panther.
Like Titanic, Avatar, like, yeah, they're okay.
The thing with Black Panther is it was a socially relevant movie.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
And so beyond being a good movie, in my opinion. It also, it had a positive social impact.
Yes.
So, you know.
For sure.
And I think of the Marvel movies, it's definitely one of the better ones.
Yes. I think that it and, like, the original Captain America are two of the best ones.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm ranking it up there. I think Marvel does best when it's trying to be, like, straight comedic. So I actually like Guardians of the Galaxy and Deadpool quite a bit. But I don't know. You know, it's just... I feel like even when there is substance, like Black Panther, it's not enough to have me engaged, because I kind of just always feel like I know exactly what's coming. And
well, I know you're going to know with Infinity War.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I don't know. It's... I just want something like a little different from movies at this point, so...
Yeah, I mean, I think the Marvel movies have been good in general, in spite of being formulaic. And for some reason, other movie studios can't pull it off. I mean, look at... I'm not saying that I don't like the DC movies, but they are not at the same level.
Oh, God, they are really...
They're a train wreck!
They're nonsense.
I tried. I watched Batman versus Superman... And then I watched Justice League, and Justice League, I know that who was Zack Snyder, I think, did the first half, and then Joss Whedon came on for the second half, and the movie just feels disjointed, even without knowing that, because I found that out afterward. I looked that up after I saw the movie. I had been paying so little attention to DC that I didn't even know it. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, like, oh, that makes perfect fucking sense. Because there's times where it's serious and grimdark, and then cuts to just some random, goofy, cheesy thing for, like, no good reason. Like, Superman goes from trying to kill people to, like, pulling off a one-liner.
Yeah, I feel like Joss Whedon filmed all the scenes with Aquaman.
Yeah.
And maybe some of the scenes with Flash, and Zack Snyder filmed everything else.
Dude, and people were saying that Cyborg was a decent character, and I'm like, he seems really just like tokenism in a bad way.
Like, I thought Flash was pretty okay.
Yeah, Flash was alright.
So was Aquaman, but the rest were kind of meh.
Aquaman, man, it's tough. Because I liked Aquaman, but I get the feeling half of Aquaman was them trying to make him seem cool because he's Aquaman. Like, even when he's legitimately good on his own, he's carried by the burden of all the Aquaman jokes.
Yeah, I feel like they just should have let Jason Momoa be Jason Momoa.
Yeah.
Wearing an Aquaman costume.
Yeah.
I would appreciate that. He's good, like, just on his own as an actor.
Yeah. And Gal Gadot was great as Wonder Woman again.
Yeah, she's phenomenal. Yeah. She's good. And it's really interesting where DC is going, too, because they've got the Shazam movie coming, which is super fucking cheesy. And
I hope they don't try to make it dark.
They've totally. You can tell the director whenever he tweets stuff, like, they've embraced the cheese. And Zachary Levi is just a cheesy person. And The Rock is in part of that franchise as Black Adam. So, like, the whole thing's just got to be coated in cheese. And that's perfect, because that's what it needs to be. And then I forgot
Zachary Levi as Shazam.
Yeah.
I totally forgot. That's, yeah.
And then there's some other franchise that they're doing a film for in DC, and I'm like, how the fuck does this connect with the grim, dark Zack Snyder? And I think they're just not. I think they're just kind of acknowledging it as canon, but just completely moving in a new direction now. And that's fine. That's good.
Have you guys seen the latest Deadpool trailer?
Yes.
Where he says, oh, you're so dark. You're not from us.
I appreciated it.
Yeah. And I like the part in the trailer where it says, from the studio that killed Wolverine. It's a good trailer. I'm really excited for Deadpool.
Yeah, I'm psyched for that one. I think that's going to be really funny.
Yeah.
He has Aquaman, Shazam, Wonder Woman 2, Flashpoint. And then there's a Birds of Prey movie.
Huh.
Oh, God, and Suicide Squad 2. No, don't do that. Apparently, there's also a Batgirl and Green Lantern Corps in the works.
And then other random shit. I don't know how to feel about it. I mean, I want it to be good. But you know, they don't have a good... Their batting averages.
Well, see, and I'm also looking down the pipeline, and there's like four movies that feature Harley Quinn, which makes sense because Harley Quinn's a, you know, it's like their Deadpool, basically, a marquee character who's like a C-lister, but people seem to really enjoy. Yeah. But like Harley Quinn in Suicide Squad, or even in like however you build Harley Quinn, feels really like antithetical to a lot of the DC universe. Like having Harley Quinn fit in with Barry Allen is weird. Having Harley Quinn fit in with Shazam and Wonder Woman is weird, you know? And like, I get that you gotta bring out that big gun, but it feels weird. It feels like it doesn't fit. And I feel like what Marvel does at the very least has a singularity of vision in what does and doesn't fit. Like what characters they're choosing and how they're choosing to bring them in. Like that's probably why we haven't had a fucking Hawkman or a Hawkeye. So we haven't had a Hawkeye movie yet.
Yeah.
You know? Because Renner just doesn't fit. He's fine in Avengers, but he just doesn't fit. Anyway.
Yeah, he's definitely a character on a team. Like, and I think the same, unfortunately, is the case with Black Widow.
Yeah, I feel like they could actually do a really good movie with her, but it doesn't fit the rest of the Marvel movies. Because hers would have to be like a spy thriller.
And I feel like Winter Soldier was that movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I don't know with the theme and the way that they've been telling stories, I don't know how you bring in the Red Room, right? Where they kidnap little girls and train them to be assassins, and then she breaks free, and like, I don't know how you build that in this universe where there's fucking Valkyrie in like an orgy ship. Like, I don't know how you do that.
Yep.
Hey, we've been talking for a while. Should we talk about this week's comic?
This week's comic.
Sure. Yes.
This week we read Starman, Sins of the Father by James Robinson. This is the second in our Legacy series. We were kind of talking about DC and the way they carry on Legacy in comic books. And we read JSA Strange Adventures last week, which felt very Golden Age, very Ted Knight. And that's when he was a big player. But now we get Ted Knight's children trying to bear the mantle of Starman.
Or in Jack's case, not bear the mantle.
Yeah, he tried so hard not to. But I gotta say, this James Robinson run of Starman, I feel like there's on Comics Alliance, there's a columnist who really penned a love letter to Walter Simonson's Thor. And I feel like after that, a lot of people picked it up and read it and really started acknowledging it. And I think before that, it was kind of an under the radar run almost, Walt Simonson's Thor. And I feel like Starman is DC's version of that. This run with James Robinson, he was on this book for 10 years, I think, doing Starman.
Yeah, it was a long time. It was a long run.
And he built these characters. He built David. He built Jack. Opal City, quote unquote, existed before that. But, you know, shit was never set there. And it was just a random city. And so what he's done with the city, like, he built this and he lived it for 10 years. And this Starman run is one of the epic runs of comics. And it's one that a lot of people don't, I think, know exists or bother to read because it's Starman.
Yeah, it is. Well, the thing, too, is it's not really like, I feel like it almost fits better in with DC's Vertigo imprint.
Yes. That's a really good way to put it.
Because it's very different from the typical DC comic fare. Okay, he was on this comic from 1994 to 2011. Oh, excuse me. No, sorry.
No, 94
to 2001. And then he did some work on with the character in 2011 also.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I think mentioning DC imprint as Vertigo is pretty good. To me, when I was reading this, it felt very 90s, but not in any of the negative ways that you usually talk about 90s comics. In that, you know, he's got an ear piercing, he wears a trendy, you know, denim leather jacket, and he's got random accessories that don't look like they're necessary at first. But what I appreciate is, like, the goggles you think are there just because they look cool, but James Robinson finds a way to build it in story-wise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of the all the stuff that in most 90s comics is added for visual fluff is just kind of there cluttering the space. But in this, he's done a good job of making it feel organic and still having it fit that 90s aesthetic that really was just not good. But it works here in a way that I haven't seen it work almost anywhere else.
Well, I think the reason it works is because it's all cohesive and it makes sense with Jack Knight as a character. Like he likes kitschy stuff, and he likes being kind of alt, which was really big in the 90s, yeah. You know? And so it all works together as with Jack Knight, because that's who he is as a person based on what we know in the comic. It all makes sense for him because as a person, that's who he is. And it doesn't feel forced. Like, you know, sometimes people will drop pop culture references in the story in an effort to be like, hey, I'm relevant, you know? and that's not the case here. Like it feels natural coming out of a Jack Knight's mouth or in his style and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I think part of it too is like he likes being alt, and that explains why he has this stuff, but then it's also just like the basic premise of he's in his shop and he's like, okay, I'm on the run. I don't have time to prepare, and here's something I can use. He puts it together on the fly, and it speaks not only to who he is, but also just like his general kind of sense of his ability to be a hero, right? Because like, you know, someone who's not cut out for this couldn't improvise the way he does. So it also shows us something like valuable about his character, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we got to talk about, so far as I'm concerned, a lot of what we talked about so far is surface level to get like started. I love the dynamic, the family dynamic in this comic. I mean, there's the plot that happens, there's the city and the way the city feels, there's all these things that are done really, really well. But I think the core mechanic of this comic is the best executed part of it, and it's what drives this whole thing, and it's the dynamic between Jack and his father and Jack and his brother, and the way that all culminates by the end of this trade in such a beautiful, perfect way. Like there's things that I kind of walk along this comic with and just kind of ignore, like the cop family, like, okay, that's kind of a thing, sure. But like the core stuff in this fires on all cylinders the whole way.
Yeah. And like the dynamic is interesting. It's not trite and it's not overdone, right? I think the cop family feels a little overdone at this yeah. point in comics, right? But this idea of like, you know, his brother wanted it, but then he's misremembering some of it too. And I was like, whoa, you know, he actually wanted this. And that surprised me. And I gotta say, like, you know, we read so many comics. It's not often that I'm genuinely surprised by a character's motives at this point, and like where it feels natural and not just something the author pulled out of their ass. So I thought that that was really well done. Like the whole development of the relationship between Jack and David, right?
Yeah, I feel like there's part of him that wanted this, but then he realized that David wanted it more. And so because he hated David and he associated with David, he made it something that he didn't want. And he told himself that he didn't want it. And he told everybody that he didn't want it because David wanted it. But then when David dies and he has to confront those emotions and those feelings that he had when they were growing up, like then he realizes that his relationship with his brother and his relationship with his heritage is a lot different from how he's trying to force it. And then he has to come to grips with that. And of course, in the pressure of a terrible, like, war on Opal City for like a week or a couple nights, but like the way that culminates for him is really, I think it's like, I didn't have a brother, I got a sister, and I don't feel too great about her. So I can relate on a certain level.
Yeah, I don't have any siblings, and I was like, damn, I get this. And I think that's a special talent to be able to convey something that you've never, like, even come close to experiencing and have it come across as genuine to an audience. So I think it's pretty clear at this point. Like, I really enjoyed this comic. I thought it was quite well done.
I'm so glad, because after last week, I thought for sure you were going to hate the next 2 weeks.
Did you have any expectations going into this, Jen?
I thought it was going to be hokey. Right? Like, I was like, this dude has a fucking gravity rod, and it's going to be, like, really 90s, so it's going to be like, I have a gravity rod, but I am also gritty. And it wasn't that. And, like, what I enjoy about this so much, too, is it actually it didn't just defy my expectations. It did it in, like, a really fun way where I totally sympathized with Jack. I thought he was, like, a really cool character who was reasonable in all his responses. He, like, I don't know, he just came across as really affable, even though he wasn't the standard charismatic hero. And it made me, like, care about what happened to him and his family. And I think, like, it's a whole mix of things that makes it feel that way, too, which is the really interesting part. It's not just like, oh, you know, he likes weird stuff or he's kind of nerdy. It's like this whole mix of personality traits where he's kind of like standoffish and kind of a jerk, but not like really one. And he's well developed and well rounded.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you get that like in the first issue.
Yeah.
I think James Robinson does an excellent job of introducing you to this character. Without making it like an origin story. You know what I mean? You get enough where you understand who Jack Knight is as a person. And so as the story continues, you start to, things are revealed about him in his past and his personality and stuff, new things, it all makes sense. Nothing feels like out of left field. Something might be surprising, but it doesn't feel, again, it doesn't feel forced.
Yeah, it's very natural, like, who he is as a person and what we expect from him as a character.
Mm-hmm. What did you guys think about Ted in this? Having seen him last week.
So this is not the first time I've read this comic. I have the first two omnibus volumes of this. I need to get the rest of them because I really like this comic also. But I find Ted is very hard to read not the act of reading about him is difficult, but it's hard to get a sense of who he is until towards the end of this trade. And I think the reason behind that is he's dealing with a lot of stuff. Like one of his sons died. And it turns out that it's the son that he didn't like as much. that he didn't like as much, but the one that he didn't really want this David to be the person who takes over the legacy.
Yeah.
And you learn a lot about, I think you learn, at least for me, not having read too much stuff about Ted Knight in the past, you learn a lot about him as a person, and maybe even if I had read a lot about him in his prime, it wouldn't necessarily be the same as him as a retired superhero who has had a family, then he has two adult sons and a late wife, he's a widower, and now one of his sons dies, and he's trying to deal with all these things. And you know, we find out later that he always felt that Jack would be the one to take over this mantle of Starman. But now he seems to be in a place where I think he's mad at Jack on one level because he, by not taking over the legacy, it resulted in death in a, maybe not in an indirect way. But at the same time, he probably on some level wants Jack to take over, but also wants to protect his only remaining child, right? And so I think he's a very complicated and interesting character in this.
Yeah, and I mean, he starts off quite the asshole, but I think you're right. I mean, understandably. Because Jack in his pushing away from the legacy is effectively pushing away his father. I mean, his father mm-hmm. embodied this hero for so long, and it's something he wants to survive beyond him, and he knows the most likely chance of that happening is in one of his sons. And so he's got two, and they're very different. But like then when Jack like ridicules the costume, and I love that we get the internal monologue. I mean, it feels kind of throwbacky how much internal monologue we get, because it's even for the 90s, this is quite a bit. But I like it because as soon as Jack starts to push back and push it away and ridicule the costume and ridicule the Starman thing, like he knows he fucked up. He knows he's going to have pissed off his father. And he almost feels like he doesn't know why he does it. And I like that, like, Ted, like, man, I would internalize that shit too. Like, it's hard to, I can't even imagine, like, my daughter talking shit about something I believed in and spent so much of my life working on, that Ted worked on this. And to have somebody that you love so much spit it in your face, like, that's hard, man. And you don't like that person for doing that to you, especially when you know that they know better. So I appreciate how complex that dynamic is developed, even in, like, issue zero.
Well, the thing, too, is, like, their family dynamic is extremely complicated, and it comes through in the way these guys don't want to tell each other how they really feel. Yeah. Like, I think the reason Jack is kind of spitting in the face of the Starman legacy is because he feels that, you know, David took over the legacy and now he's the favorite son.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever Jack does is not going to be good enough. So he is going to, you know, be his own person and screw everybody else.
Yeah. And David's a prick.
Yeah. But we don't necessarily know that. It doesn't seem that way at first.
I don't know. I kind of think it is in a really subtle way. In issue zero, right before he gets shot, the narration for him says that he's like above the city, looking down on people, knowing that they're afraid of him.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's not a Starman vibe. That's a Batman vibe, and that doesn't feel like an authentic hero, especially considering you know he hasn't been out there that long. Ted's still alive, so to have that kind of weighty cockiness, like, there's something almost bullying in that sentiment, which we later discover is true, that he was a bit of a bully. But even from that first little bit of monologue or internal monologue, you can kind of get it. You kind of hear tones of him being not the one who should be doing this.
He seems to enjoy the power that it gives him. Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
In a negative way, which is not the way heroes should be.
No.
At least, you know, that's what we learn from reading Cape comics.
Yeah. I mean, like, in last week's issue was kind of silly, but we saw Ted genuinely discuss with Alan Scott whether or not he should give up his cosmic rod for the betterment mm-hmm. of civilization. I don't think David would ever have that thought. David would want to go in and kick Lord Dynamo's ass, you know, mm-hmm. which is what you ended up having to do anyway. But, like, Ted had that genuine conversation. I can't see David doing that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And you get the sense, too, that David's also maybe doing it just out of a sense that he's expected to. You know, because it's like, well, Jack didn't. And, you know, we can guess that maybe David wanted to. But then you get the flashback to them as kids where Jack is the one who's like, I want to be just like you, Dad. And, you know, and then he doesn't take up that role. So I think that adds this other layer of complexity to how, you know, they interact with each other. Because David is doing the thing that Jack abandoned, and he's putting his life on the line. And it's dubious as to whether any of the three men in the family want to be doing the thing they're currently doing. but they've like pressured each other through this unhealthy dynamic into doing those things. Right? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
It's not, they're bad communicators.
Well, and it also, like, I also wonder how much of the dynamic they've inherited from their youth. Like you're saying, David doesn't want to do it, but it feels like he has to do it because Jack won't. But we see David studying a lot in a lot of the flashbacks. He studies and he beats people up. So it makes me wonder how long he's known that he has to do it. But by the same token, when we see those flashbacks of Jack idolizing his father with the little viewfinder and stuff, it makes me wonder, like, did Jack idolize that stuff because Starman was golden age and vintage? And does he like old crap because his father's hero is considered old crap? Like, we think of Starman, Ted Knight, as a golden age, old crap kind of character. You know, last week we were talking about, like, this feels like an old comic. It feels like it's out of place, time, you know, taken out of its time. And that's the kind of stuff Jack likes. Jack would collect his father's comics. You know, especially like Strange Adventures, some random stuff.
Yeah.
So it makes me wonder if he internalized that, but then pushed away the actual legacy. Complex characters. It's wonderful.
Well, and I think you know, a lot of comics are team books, and we don't get as much time with a particular character, or even if you do, they're not complicated. I mean, like, look at Voodoo, right? That was not a good comic. And we get the opposite with this one. There's so much about this comic that I love. I feel like I want to move on to the next thing already, but like the next thing to talk about regarding this comic. But
yeah, no, I think you're right too. I mean, this gives you a family dynamic. It's important that you have a long-standing conflict established, and James Robinson does a really good job of, like, issue zero. These people are a family, and they have crap. Like, every family has crap, and these people have crap. And they have shit going on between them, and that's the way it is when you have a family. And so this comic from issue zero feels way different from, say, Kate Bishop, where she's out there on her own, and sure, she makes some friends, some pals, she has an entourage, Jessica Jones comes through, but her relationship with Jessica Jones is nothing like Jack has with almost anybody else in this comic.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I could say akin to, like, the cop family. That's about... You know, most of the relationships in that Kate Bishop comic were very surface level. And a lot of relationships in a lot of comics are very surface level. So to jump into this where, like, you got, you know, 30 years of baggage tied to your characters, and to make that feel real, like, that's almost refreshing. I mean, it's weird to say that baggage is refreshing. But it leads to complex feeling characters really quickly. And it leads to really good storytelling really quickly. And I appreciate that it's not just on the hero side, too. Like, the Mists family. Oh, man, that daughter is lit. I love that daughter. She's so fucking cool. I loved when she gets taken away, and he was like, "Didn't you have a stutter?" And she's like, "That must not have been me."
Yeah, that was, like, that was a fucking savage answer.
She's come back for you, bro.
You know, I want to touch on the team dynamic thing, too, because I think that this family dynamic thing actually does a cool twist on it. If you think about it, a family is, this is like the cheesiest thing I've ever said, a family is a team. Right? But what you have are these interpersonal interactions where you rely on each other for day-to-day important things in mm-hmm. your life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you mess any of those things up, it can really dramatically and negatively impact the other people. And, like, when we think about Cape comics, we think about this in terms of life and death. But when we look at these families, that's actually what we're talking about, because the legacy that, you know, Ted has bestowed onto David does cause his death. And that is, you know, a team failing in a way. The same with Mist and his children. They are caring for him. And wait, like, it seems like he's crazy and has dementia. And that's part of what's driving him to come back and do these things. But, you know, want to show their loyalty or love or whatever to their dad, and they're really putting themselves on the line in a dangerous way because, oh God, what's his name? Miss Sun.
Oh God, I don't remember.
I cannot remember
that's
it.
That's why I put Miss Sun in the notes. Remember his name? He's like one of the main antagonists, and I can't remember his name.
I think they only say it like once.
Yeah.
And it's after he's dead.
He gets dead. Like, and that's a dynamic, like, in terms of team as well, right? It's like your leader has ordered you to go do something, and it resulted very poorly for you. So I think that this is cool, because, like, you know, you mentioned Kate Bishop, and she comes out and she's all alone, and anyone that we build up from there is a new relationship. But everyone, well, most people, like, know what it is to have some sort of family. And you can already come in with these pre-set notions mm-hmm. of, like, what it should be to have a dad. You know, how he should act in your life. And then the cultural idea of what a dad should do. You know, as opposed to, like, whatever your personal experience is. And then you get to compare those against the dynamic that we see in the comic and weigh what you know about, like, a good dad or a bad dad against what Ted and Mist are doing. And that sets up, like, this pre-established dynamic. So we go in already with a lot of knowledge just based on what we have from our own lives. And that sets up a dynamic very different than, like, Kate Bishop picking up new friends.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you see both sides of that coin here, right, too. I mean, here, I don't know how the conversation went with Ted handing down the custom rod to David. I'm sure it was David, like, I'm ready, and Ted going, I bequeath you this rod, or some other random shit. But then after David dies, Ted is like, Jack, you get the fuck out of town, bro. Like, I know we're fighting and all, but you are my son, and I got one dead son, and I don't care if he kills me, because I'm old anyway. Like, you leave. You run, and you go away, and when things calm down, maybe you come back. But he's like, I don't want to burden you. Like, part of it, he gets harsh, and he's like, I don't want you to die because you suck at this, you piece of trash. But he's also like, I've got one son. Get the hell out of here, man. Whereas the Mist is like, go do things for me, and I don't give a shit what happens to you. You know, like, this is my dying wish, and I don't care what it means for you. I don't care what it means for the city. I care that it gets done, because fuck that guy. And it's very different kinds of parenting, you know? And to be fair, both of them have the devotion of their family, so I mean, I guess you could say there's something to be said for each, but, you know, obviously one is right and one is wrong.
Well, you know, the thing about Ted, too, is, like, we can make the assumption that he's just being a dickhead, but we can also hope, especially based on his later interactions with Jack, that what he's doing is being a good dad. Because, you know, maybe he says that he sees that Jack actually has the hero's instinct or whatever. If you know your family is being targeted for being part of, like, you know, this lineage, then you might want to stick around and, you know, help your dad. And being like, get out of here, you're shitty at this and I don't love you because the other one was my favorite son, is a good way to drive your child away. But that puts him out of harm's way.
Yeah, which is what you want to do. I like this comic. Do you guys like this comic?
It's good. I love it.
I also really like Shade.
Yes. He's just, like, I can't tell if he's malicious or not. He's just doing his thing.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes him really good in this comic, is because he's very much just doing his thing. And in the past, he says, like, in the past, it means I've been a villain. You know, you know, kind of clash with the Flash every once in a while. But, you know, now I'm here in Opal City, and I like it in Opal City. I like it quiet here. I want it to be quiet. And sometimes that means I help a bad guy. Sometimes that means I help a good guy. But I want what I want because it's what I want. And I appreciate that the fallback is that he's been alive for hundreds of years. So he knows what he wants, and he knows what he has to do to get it. And he's going to do it. And the way he manipulates people, it comes from, I don't know. It doesn't, like, yeah, I don't think it feels malicious. I think it just comes from, like, knowledge of, he knows what to get out of people. He knows people like Jack. He's met people like Jack hundreds of times. He knows what to make him. He knows what to give him. He knows what to do. Like, of all the things he could have saved from that museum that was getting ransacked, he knew to save the plaque because it had the mother's name on it, especially for Jack. Like, you know those things about these kinds of people. When you've been alive for hundreds or thousands of years. So I appreciate that he does have his own motivations and that it works really well in this comic because everybody else has really clear motivations. It's great to have that kind of ambiguous character here. Everybody else, you know what they're doing. The only hint of ambiguity comes from Miss Daughter when she spares him, but that gets cleared up. You know why. But even when Shade says he likes quiet in Opal City, like, for what? Like, there's everywhere you could go. Why here?
Yeah, he's just, I don't know, like, he's kind of the trickster figure of the piece, which is so weird to have in a Cape comic. But it's fun, and it's unexpected, right? Because you spend the whole comic thinking that he's going to turn on Jack at some point, and then he doesn't. He's just, like, hanging out, dicking with him for no reason.
So what did you guys make of the Hawaiian shirt issue?
That was so weird, but I really, really liked how it turned out.
I loved it, too, because what's cool about it is it seems like it's going to be this big, huge thing, and then the dude shows up with the gun and everything. He's like, why don't you just buy it? And they're like, okay. And everybody goes on their way.
Yeah.
He's like, I got a box of shirts. Probably in there. You go. And I'm like, hell, he makes him go find it.
The best part, too, is, like, the guy's like, it's a gateway to heaven. And Jack just nopes the hell out of there.
Yeah. I don't know. It was a good little reprieve.
Like, isn't a hero supposed to want to find something like that or keep it out of someone else's hands?
Or investigate it, or I don't know. Yeah, like, investigate it, figure out how it works, what does it really do, the history of it, I don't know. Give it to Batman for analysis. Yeah, no, he just sells it. He doesn't even ask. Yeah. He doesn't even ask who the guy is, who the guy works for. Jack doesn't need none of that information. He just needs cold hard bucks.
Well, like, I feel like it's playing too on, like, really goofy Cape comic storylines, because it's totally the standard thing where you're gonna be taken on this long, boring, inane thing about, like, some stupid shirt that will open the gateway to heaven, and now we have to stop the villain from getting it because reasons. And this one is just like, nah, you know, he doesn't want it. This guy can buy it. I really like how the storyline was so truncated.
Yep. And I do appreciate as a break between the weight of the first four issues and then the last one where he's talking to his dead brother. Like, it was really nice to have this random thing in the middle to kind of calm you back down. It was good pacing. What did you guys think of the art in this?
I like it.
It's, yeah, super 90s.
I'm a fan of Tony Harris art in general, so.
What else has done? Let me see what else he's done. Because I honestly don't recall. But yeah, my reaction is like the same as Jen's. Like, it's very 90s. But again, like I said, for the character design of Jack Knight, it's super 90s, but not in the bad way.
I think I mostly know him from Starman, actually. But like I said, I've been a fan of this comic for a good long time. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the art in a comic like this is really important. Not just because you're introducing a new character and character design, all those kinds of things that are definitely important. And not just even for tone and feeling, but, like, the way that James Robinson talks about Opal City and wants the whole thing set in Opal City and wants the character, I think, to come out of the city in a way that feels organic, the way that, like, people know Metropolis, the way that people know Gotham. This other one has a name and you know it exists. It's on the map of the DC Atlas, but you've never been there. You don't know what it feels like. And James Robinson can use all of the words that he wants to use, but it comes down to Tony Harris to make it work. Because that city, no matter how much you talk about it, doesn't have the character if it doesn't come across in art. And I think the way that James Robinson talks about it does come across. You get striking modernist Art Deco buildings next to old town alleyways and tunnels. And the juxtaposition that exists within the city works really well in the art. And I love the way it carries over into the narrative, too, you know, with like the old of Ted Knight and the young of Jack Knight and the blending of the two. And it works really, really well. And that works because the art style works so well for this city and the way it's drawn.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
Yep. You did such a good job putting it succinctly in.
I always hope to start a conversation, then sometimes I just go there myself and we end up there.
It's a good way to view it, though. I mean, I had never heard of Opal City before this in a real way. I mean, of course we've seen it in passing over the past, like, what, 5 years that we've been doing this?
Yeah.
But I don't feel familiar with it, and now I do. And it also just has, like, that cool flavor. It's like, you know, you think, oh, if it's Art Deco, you know, what kind of place would someone like Jack, who is the embodiment of the 1990s, do there? But then you get the alleys. Oh, I just remembered the one thing, like, oh, the fortune teller. What's her name? Charity?
Yeah. Chastity?
Chastity?
Something like that.
Starts with a CH and ends with a Y. That was like a weird interlude, but it was very Opal City. I feel like more than introducing the character, it was introducing this aspect of those like winding alleyways.
Yeah.
And the best part too is he's just like, you know, how'd you move in so mysteriously? And she says something about like hiring people and a truck and moving. And just because he wasn't paying attention doesn't mean that she wasn't there. Like she didn't do anything interesting. And like, it also says something about the city too. It's like, you know, he kind of adds this mystique to the alleyways and how protective and strange and, you know, different they are than the skyscrapers. But it's like, or maybe it's just a pretty normal place and you're romanticizing it.
Yeah, but it's important to build the city as a character, because I mean, if you've read a Flash comic, you know about Keystone City because it's awesome. If you know, a lot more people know about Star City now thanks to Arrow, Coast City because it was blown up. You know, and there's other cities in the DC universe that you know about, but Fawcett is there. There's like one really good scene in Fawcett with Black Adam. But other than that, I don't even know Fawcett that well, and I like Shazam. So it's something that I don't know if you guys in the omnibus in the front, James Robinson talks a little bit about the tendency for DC to have made up cities and how it finds it charming. You know, if you picked up the omnibus, you should go read that. And that's a conversation we can have later. But do you guys want to rate this thing? It's getting kind of late.
Sure. Yeah.
I feel like I could talk about this for another 20 minutes, but we gotta cut it off.
So we can go to sleep.
Yeah, in that case, I'm going to go first. But before that, I want to thank James Robinson for writing this. I want to thank Tony Harris for drawing it. I want to thank Wade Van Graubadger for inking it, Gregory Wright for coloring it, John Workman for lettering it, Stephen Wacker and Peter J. Tomasi for being the editors on this vault. Like,
Wait.
No, that's got to be, that's got, no, no.
I didn't finish doing the names.
Okay.
That's last week.
I was going to say, that seems really familiar. I'll just cut it at John Workman. And
yeah,
thank
sorry,
you.
I couldn't figure out who the editor was.
Yeah, no problem. And so thank you, all of you, for everybody who worked on this, even the people that didn't get mentioned, editors, DC publishing people, like, whatever. Because if you hadn't have wrote the thing, if you hadn't have drawn the thing, it wouldn't have gotten to our hands to talk about it and enjoy it, regardless of whether we liked it or didn't like it. So no matter how much we rate a comic, it's important to thank creators for doing the work. I'm going to go first because I never do, and I feel like this is a layup. I'm going to give this a 5 for obvious reasons. Most of that I just said, we could talk about it for another 20 minutes. We often have comics that are good, and we all say they're really good, but then there's not much to talk about other than the fact that, wow, that was really good, right? Yeah, that was good. It was good. But this is good. We all came into it saying it was good. We know it's good. And we talked about it for like a half an hour, and we could talk about it for another half an hour or two. At that point, like, there's so much in this. There's so much meat to this comic. It's written so tightly, but so deep. I don't see how I don't give it a 5. There's some stuff I could nitpick, sure, but it's not worth it. This is fantastic. So, 5. Jen, how about you go next?
Also a 5. You know, it's like you said, there is stuff to nitpick, but it is nitpicking. I don't think that, you know, I could find any serious fault with this comic. I think not only was it enjoyable to read, it had a really nuanced and valuable look at what it means to be part of a family, what it means to exist within a legacy, and what it means to, like, be an individual, you know, straining against that. And I think that's a very universal story. You know, we all try to differentiate ourselves from what came before us, whether or not, you know, it has anything to do with superheroes. And I think it's that, like, universality of this story that made it so interesting and accessible. 5. I thought this was just super. Like, I loved this. I am a convert. And I would love to read more of Jack as this hero.
All right. David, what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely going to give this a 5. This is one of those comics where, like, when I first read it, like, many years ago, I had no idea what to expect. And I thought it was going to be kind of cheesy, maybe, because it's Starman. But, wow. I was totally blown away. This is a good comic. There's, like, 6 omnibus volumes. It's worth the read. Seriously. We only read the first 6 issues, and there's so much more to this comic. Like, we talked about the fortune teller scene a little bit, but those things are not, a lot of the things that she sees about Jack are not throwaway. They come back later. Mm-hmm. And it's so, which is another thing that amazes me. Like, those could just be throwaway lines, but they all come back as you keep reading. So, and it's just well written. The art's great. It's just it's a classic, and I don't think it gets the attention it deserves.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think whenever somebody's on a title for half as long as this, like, you get into the characters. You get into the characters, and it's worth reading. But what I find astounding about this is that it's worth reading from page 1. and that there's developed meaty characters from the very beginning, and it only gets better from there. But we are going to move away from this, and next week we're going to read Courtney Whitmore. We're going to read JSA Black Vengeance, written by Geoff Johns. Courtney Whitmore is a character created by Geoff Johns. Her father or stepfather, I should check that before next week, was the Star Spangled Kid that we saw in JSA Strange Adventures last week. He did, like, nothing, but he was there. Courtney Whitmore meets Jack Knight when Jack Knight is about ready to retire, and Courtney Whitmore is just this really inspiring kid. And Jack decides to pass the rod down to her, being that he has no kids and David's dead, so legacy's got to live on somewhere. So he passes it to Courtney Whitmore, and she becomes part of the JSA with it. So I'm excited to read Courtney Whitmore, because she is awesome. And it's weird for me to talk about how awesome a, like, 16-year-old girl is. But I'm comforted by the fact that David also thinks she's awesome.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I like the whole Starman legacy. All of them are cool in their own way. And they don't even really have powers, you know? They just have this cosmic rod.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can't wait to read next week. We've read the previous trade. This is, like, trade 11 in JSA and, like, the 4th or 5th in the Geoff Johns run. But we read the previous one. So if you are interested, you can go back and read that, or you can go back and listen to that. Go to welcometocomics.com on the left, or actually it's on the right now. Hit the button that says past episodes. You can see all of our 318 previous episodes. I did fix the archive page. It works again. Hooray!
Hey, good job, Andy. Yay!
Yes. So you can go find that. It's JSA by Jeff Johns. Yeah, but until then, everybody, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.